Andy came to see us a few weeks ago now, not a few months ago.
Talking
about orienteering for beginners in Northumberland. Anyway, so how's things been going since the last one?
Well, it's quite busy, actually. It's a busy time of the year for orienteering, as we sort of fade down a bit in a few weeks for the summer when it gets a bit warm. We're having good fun at the moment, splashing round lots of places because the water level is actually really quite ridiculous. A comparatively simple sport is orienteering because it's all based upon competitive navigation with nothing more than a very detailed map, and I'll talk more about maps later, and a compass to guide you around a course. I was on an internet website this morning where an editor is doing a poll about the best sport. And the orienteers have found this, so we've voted, so it now shows as the best sport. Unfortunately, the editor is of the opinion it isn't actually a sport. I don't think he's realised quite how hard people run around the courses, quite how hard they do at elite level. At the moment, the World Masters orienteering is going on over in East Germany, and I'm having great difficulty getting details about the results out of it. But one thing I know is that a W80 from this area, Eileen Bedwell, a bit further south in Cleveland, actually qualified for the long final in third place. Now, W80, and Eileen won't mind this, means she's a woman between 80 and 85. That's a fair range. And we actually arrange orienteering, so we all work in theory against our peers, both age group and physically. We do the physically by choosing the course we run, and I'll talk more about that later. But in age groups, up until 21, they're two-year age groups, so you get M stroke W, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18 and 20. There's a big group from 21 to 35 where everybody's supposed to be on a par, and it's not true. And then there's five-year age groups on from that point. So you get MW 35, 40, 45, 55, which happens to include me, 60, 65. I believe the oldest that's been seen is an M100. And I think that's pretty good going and shows that there's a big range there. And you get people of those ages turning up regularly at events to compete and compete at levels. Interestingly enough, I said the World Masters is going on. And one of the women competing in that, and she again won't mind, the W35 age group, is Sarah Rowlands. Now, Sarah is an army person, so she gets a lot of time to orienteer. And she actually competed a few weeks ago at top level in the World Orienteering Championships as an elite. So it's actually a sport where you can keep going at a good level for quite a while and fade yourselves down slowly. It's also a sport that we do at all sorts of locations. You tell where you are on the control on the course by a series of control points, which on the map that Jerry's got in front of him are marked by pink circles. And in the middle of each of those, there will be a control box of some variety. In fact, in that instance, they will actually be true punches, i.e. pins on a that you punch together across a control card that actually shows you the exact pattern shows you are actually at the right control. And that's the way we've always done it, and the comparatively cheap way of doing it. And of course, we refer to that as punching a control. But we move ourselves into a more sophisticated world of electronics these days, where lots of things are in there, and we can actually get a lot more information. And that's where the brick, it's a brick, by the way, not a bricky, which apparently is a Scandinavian word for a slab. And it looks like a slab, doesn't it, Jerry?
Yeah, it looks like something you'd have on your car keys, a big fob, actually, just a bit longer than a fob, isn't it?
Yes,
for
yes.
The car key. And the other thing I've seen is sometimes there's card readers that you put into a computer, and you'd put a card in the end and it stick in a USB. So it's not much bigger than that. It sits very nicely in the palm of your hand, and it's shaped. It has obviously got a strap on it so you don't lose it. And it has a screen, probably for a digital readout.
Well, the screen, actually, when you're competing, tells you exactly how long you've been travelling for. which enables you to actually save carrying a stopwatch. If Jerry passes it now, he'll find out what my EBIT number is, which is the registration number for it.
It says it's 331.
Yeah, and it it gets used on the way around to tell you there. It actually will also tell you what the number of the last control you went to was, which is quite useful in telling you where you are on the course, because I've got to tell you, when you're running flat out, you end up getting quite confused as to where you are at any moment and find yourself trying to remember whether you've been to number 19 or whether you're still going to number 19. At least with that, it gives you a chance there. There's a competitive system of doing it, which is referred to as a dibber. And I'm now going to pass Jerry a dibber for him to give you a quick description of.
What can we say about a dibber? Right. Bit like a USB memory stick, actually. Seems to have a cap on the top. So if you take it off on a USB, you'd actually insert it into your computer. It's about the same size as that. So that's how I would describe it.
That's a pretty good description. The end of it goes into a small hole on a control box. And again, it measures exactly how you've done and when you get there. That actually means that when we finish a competition, you can actually get a very good idea of your position against other people, because we actually print out and display on the internet your time at each control, your lapse time on there, which enables you to do a virtual run against other people, which could be quite interesting in working out where you lost time or where you gained time. Give a chance there. It also means, by the way, that you can't do the controls out of sequence, because it knows when you went to it. So if you go out of sequence, it tells you you've actually mispunched, which is a very good way of controlling the sport and giving you a chance of getting round there against your peers in competition on level terms. And knowing what it is. They're not big devices, and they're actually not an essential for you when you're first trying the sport, because we actually have them to hire and people borrow them. I've bought them because I do quite a lot and I actually like to have them there. I've also bought them partially because if Jerry had looked at the side of the dibber, he'll see a number on it which is unique to the dibber and actually happens to be, in this case, my wife's date of birth, which makes it rather easy for us to remember where it is.
I don't think she'd want me to read that out somehow.
I don't think she would. in case she's managed to tune in on the internet, I hope she's feeling a bit better, because she's not feeling very well at the moment. And oddly enough, she's the club treasurer, so she's the one who has to fork out all the money for anything we do there. So it gets quite interesting. So we do these courses around at various levels, and as I said before, the maps are very detailed, very specialised. Anything down to 1,000 to 2,500 on urban events. The one for Blythe Valley that's in front of Jerry at the moment is 1,000 to 10,000, which is a fairly standard size. But this sort of a fifth of the scale of an OS 1-inch map, which means they are very detailed and give a lot of information. As Jerry can see from that, there's all sorts of small hillocks shown on it and small depressions shown on it, little patches of woodland. It's got one marsh shown on that, and I swear the whole area is a marsh, but that's another matter. there's also pits shown on it and areas like this. The colours on it, as I said before, are representative. Orange is our open land, white is runnable woodland, and the darker green gets, the less easy it is to get through the woodland. And when it gets really severe, you have to actually fight your way through it. Hence the description of areas like that as a fight. And we wouldn't actually put a control within a fight, so hence why I described it in the riddle as being on the edge of a fight. And we run, I say most of the events are on open land of some area, public parks, urban areas, woodlands. This one is a country park, that's quite good. Courses come at a variety of technical and distance standards, which is an improvement from the days when I first started, where I went from comparatively simple, easy courses The Stasius course is a white, which is basically put a control at every time you have to make a decision and guide them round. If we ever get anybody lost on a white, we fire the planner because he clearly hasn't done it right. Above that is a yellow course where we start missing a few of those out to make it a bit longer, something like 1.5 to 2.5 kilometres distance. That's measured as a straight line, so you probably actually run that as miles. Bit longer than that, we have an orange course, which is more technically difficult because controls will be off the features, away from that, but they will actually be visible from a line feature. That's a fence, a path, a ditch, stream, something like that, that you can navigate on reasonably easily. Beyond that, we start getting slightly more technical, and then we come to what I've referred to in the riddle, a light green course. And a light green course can have what we refer to as a point feature, which would be a pit or a single boulder like that, as long as it is relatively near a line feature or has a line feature behind it, to what we refer to as a catching feature, which translates as if you run past it, you don't keep running on forever, you've got a reason to turn round. So a classic catching feature would be a pond or a fence or a very large path. Give you a chance there, or a plantation. Beyond that, and these used to be the standard courses, we have green, blue, brown and black, which get to different, which are all the same TD5 technical standard that can ask from there, and they are all as technically hard as you can make it in the area, but they increase in distance. A green course will be maybe 4.5 kilometres long. Below that you sometimes have a very short green or a short green, which be around the 3 kilometre mark. And up at black courses can be anything up to 17 or 18 kilometres long. And elites will be doing those in 60 to 65 minutes. Now, that is travelling at one heck of a pace. And I've got no chance of doing that under any circumstances. I'll be found doing the green course, and I will traditionally get round a green course in 70 or 80 minutes, which for me is a good run. If I drop down to a light green course, I will do it in about 3/4 of an hour or so, and that is actually around the winning time that's planned for a course of that nature. So as you can see, there's a variety there which enables you to tune the amount of time you expect to be out on the course and have a reasonable chance of getting round comfortably without getting too tired. You don't need much equipment. In fact, I think most of it's in front of us as we speak. We have the dib of brick there. We have a compass. And I've actually been giving away compasses that were bought for £1.50 in advertising time Wilkinson's, which contain a built-in whistle, which is the other item we've got. And a whistle is the one key safety device because we know the sequence of blowing 6 blasts is a warning to tell people to come to you. And orienteers are very good at responding to safety needs. When we were on last time, Paul gave the story out about the World Orienteering Championships relay, where Thierry Georgiou, I can remember his name, was leading the relay, and obviously he's got two teammates who are relying upon this, and fell and hurt himself significantly. The next three runners all gave up their own runs, and the first one gave him first aid, the second two, one ran to the finish and one ran to the start to get help. And that is one of the key rules of orienteering, is we look after each other and we abandon our own runs. In case you're interested, the people who inherited the titles refused to accept their medals because they thought that they should have gone to the people who were actually winning the event before. On a personal note, back in last year, I did an event down in Shropshire and I was passed by a cartwheeling M70, so that's somebody between 70 and 75, going down a slope rather too quickly and ending up upside down in a bush at the bottom. Now, I didn't think twice. I completely sacrificed my own run and stayed with him for 15 minutes while I made sure he was okay and safe there. Actually, he let me get back on my run later when I was sure he was okay, and I reckon I lost 100 ranking points on that. And when I'm only running with 3,000 ranking points as total, that's actually quite a big loss. There are a national system of ranking points, which is run by the British Orienteering Federation, who can be found via our website, where you can actually get more details of the events. Our website is www.newcastleorienteering.org.uk, or you might actually find it easier to go via www.muddy.org, which is owned by one of our club members and links up to it. And I actually think that's a brilliant description because it somewhat describes the sport. My wife is of the opinion I only have fun when I get dirty. I used to be a rugby player, and that's definitely a sport in which you get dirty. And Jerry will tell you I'm built for that. These days I do some mountain biking where you come back muddy. And in fact, we've got a mountain bike orienteering event a week on Sunday based on Bolam Lake. That one you do have to actually enter in advance, unlike most of our events. That's because the insurance is through the Mountain Biking Federation rather than British Orienteering. But again, anybody's welcome to that. Recommended you use a mountain bike rather than a road bike. And again, details are on our website. We're also running a club night. I'm afraid it's a bit far away from Alnwick because it's at Prudhoe. But every Wednesday night from 6:30 to 8 o'clock, we do a club night in Prudhoe Community College. Community High School, got to get this right. And again, if you turn up, you'll be made more than welcome, and we'll be quite happy to give you the idea of how this sport works. And it is quite challenging. If any of you are less physically able, and I've got to be honest, you can start orienteering as a very unfit person and get quite fit quite quickly, because you can walk around the courses, you don't have to run. The better of us do run. I tend to be described, when I look at my GPS printout, I get a printout when I'm finished, it tends to describe my speed as slow jog, which I think is quite dispiriting when I'm running. I think I'm running quite fast. But lots of people walk around, and walking around, you can actually build up your ability, build up your knowledge, and get a much better idea of how to navigate and how to read a map. But there is also a version of the sport that is called trail orienteering. And I was actually at the World Trail Orienteering Championships with John Crosby, who lives in Cramlington and was in the British team as a Paralympian. He's actually had two knee replacements, which gives him a chance to do it there. And I had a really bad result as a trail orienteer because it's such a complicated sport. But I've got to be honest, it's so challenging that I'm looking forward to doing it again at the next opportunity.
There we go. I think Andy's getting a little bit hoarse at the moment. He's told us a lot about the orienteering and what's going on.